Welcome back to Communicating. I'm today's host, Kirk Evans. Today we have a great show for you. We're going to focus on Java and .NET interoperability. There's a lot of systems out there that have Java and distributed communication over Java Messaging Service API, that JMS. How would you introduce .NET into that type of system? Well, today's show, we're going to focus on that, and we're going to talk with Mr. Wayne Citron from JM Bridge to see what type of solutions that they have, how you can use the Windows Communication Foundation programming techniques in your custom application, or even within BizTalk for your solutions. Let's take a look.
Hi, Kirk. I'm Wayne Citron from JM Bridge. I'm the CTO and a co-founder of the company.
So tell me a little bit about JM Bridge. How long have y'all been around?
We've been around since the summer of 2001, around the time that .NET was in beta, and we've been doing Java.NET interop from the very beginning.
And so did y'all start, was that the reason for founding the company?
Yep, that was. I mean, what really happened was a friend of mine who had been learning about .NET, he was at the University of Colorado, we're in Boulder, had come from a faculty summit and came back and said, you ought to take a look at this .NET stuff. And some other friend of mine, when I started asking around about this, asked, well, will it work with J2EE? And we just started looking in news groups, and lots of questions about, is this going to work with Java? And we thought we were onto something. So we started there and didn't look back.
Okay, so it's actually really interesting that was the approach, was integrating the .NET and Java. Because mm-hmm. at first, the whole story was web services, got to be XML.
Yep.
So obviously, it's not XML.
Right.
So what is JM Bridge Pro? What does it do?
Okay, well, what JM Bridge Pro does is, just to start with the web services are great for a lot of things, you know, but there are performance issues, there's some capability issues.
Oh, wait, now, I'm a web services guy. Don't go knocking.
Yeah, no, I'm not going to say anything bad about web services, but, you know, I mean, just because of, you know, the nature of the beast, there are just certain things that it wasn't designed to do.
Sure.
And
all right, I'll take that one.
And, you know, I mean, we've never told anybody not to use web services. People usually come to us, you know, if they've tried web services, they probably try web services first. It's free. It's built in. And when it just didn't quite do what they wanted, you know, they'll come to us because they're looking for things like a fine-grained object-oriented API, the ability to access that, the ability to access custom objects by reference, the ability to have really transparent callbacks and exceptions. And there are actually performance issues involved in passing HTTP, you know, passing SOAP over an HTTP channel, and the other thing is that they may want to access Java code which was not web services enabled.
Okay.
Any of those things, you know, you need to try something else.
But obviously, it's not XML web services.
Yeah.
What's going on? If you don't mind.
No, not at all. What's underneath is .NET remoting, really.
Remoting's not dead.
Remember .NET remoting? No, it's not dead. And Microsoft is.
It just smells funny, is what Don Bach said, right?
Yeah. Well, Don. Yeah.
But how in the world do you get Java to talk to .NET? I mean, this is okay. A lot of customers are asking this.
Yeah.
This is goodness.
Okay. Yeah. Well, what we do is we. It's a proxy-based approach.
Sure.
That we do is we proxy the Java objects and classes that we want to access so that they can be addressed directly by the .NET code.
Okay.
And then the proxies know how to do the communication, or rather, they actually hook into our underlying communications infrastructure. Now, what's happening is, on the Java side, we have a couple of channels that we use. There's a HTTP SOAP, which is the standard one from remoting.
Right.
There's a binary channel that we've created. We made it a little more robust than it was initially for Microsoft. And there's a shared memory channel. And the two socket-based channels, what we've done is we've essentially reproduced that channel endpoint on the Java side, and we run a little remoting server. That will take our requests and dispatch them to the proper Java classes and object, run the object lifecycle management, send the results back, where they're handled by the regular remoting infrastructure, and our own infrastructure on top of that takes those values and and manages the objects and the proxies and things like that. Now, on the with shared memory, which is really cool, what we have is the with shared memory, we have our remoting channel. The sync that's the terminal sync at the end is not a TCP endpoint anymore. It's a JVM that's actually embedded, running embedded inside the CLR.
So to be able to use this then, you said if it's embedded in the CLR, that kind of necessitates that the solution is running on Windows, right?
Yes. Yes, the .NET portion has to run on Windows. We've actually had people asking us about Mono, and we don't support that.
So what about the JVM side, though? Does the JVM side have to run on Windows, or is it can remote?
No, if it can be, if you use one of the socket-based approaches,
sure,
then it can be on any machine, anywhere
on
the network.
Oh, cool. Okay.
And just communicate across sockets.
Okay.
If it's shared memory, it definitely has to be running on the same machine, so it has to be a Windows machine.
Okay.
And by the way, we do the other thing, same thing in the other direction. You know, you can call .NET from Java, and in that case, we're actually hosting a CLR inside the Java virtual machine.
Cool. Well, if you don't mind, would you show us a couple of quick demos?
Oh, sure. No problem.
Okay.
This is our JMS adapter. You know, we have this new product. A lot of people wanted to integrate between .NET and Java message service, so we created a special adapter using Microsoft's WCF Line of Business Adapter SDK. And so the first thing we would do is add a reference to that adapter right here and basically just say, let's point Visual Studio to the adapter. We've configured this so that we're... actually connected, we're actually pointing it to an OpenJMS server.
So what is OpenJMS?
OpenJMS is a freeware JMS implementation, but it could just as easily be WebSphere or Oracle or Sonic or anything like that. What we've done here is it goes out and it connects to the server, and it says, and what we're going to do is say, okay, we're going to do something really simple with text messages. So we're going to send a text message, and we're going to receive a text message. What these adapters do is they go out and get metadata from the server. So we actually ask the server, what queues and topics do you have? And it tells us and gives us the kinds of operations that are available on those, and we get to pick those out. If we don't know what queue or topic is available, we can actually say, okay, well, I'm just going to supply that information in a parameter. So what I've done here is I've said I'm going to do a send and a receive, and it's going to create for me a custom API, a set of stubs. You notice here there's an API, there's a call to send text to Q1 and a call receive text from Q1. And there's also definition of the adapter client object, which is what we're going to be addressing through.
So this is mostly the line of business SDK that's generating this stuff, and you all plugged into that architecture, right?
That's correct. That's absolutely correct. So what I'm going to do is create an instance of the client. And now I'm going to send a message to the client. However, the client send a message. And now there are lots of different ways to do receives. They can be synchronous, like a blocking receive. That's what I'm going to do here because it's really simple to demo. There's also asynchronous receives where I just say, oh, I want to receive, and then I go off and do something else, and eventually it will receive. We can also do inbound services where we register listeners, and you know, whenever messages are received, that listener gets fired. In fact, I can show that with the Excel spreadsheet later on. But let's just send a message and then turn around and receive it. Okay, we're going to get a message client dot receive text from Q1. Now let's just print it out.
Where would we be without console.writeline demos, right?
Exactly. Where would we be? Okay, that should be enough for now. Okay, that's built. Now let's just run it. I suggest you just see the message being displayed. There we go. Receive the message. Hello, Microsoft. You know, my poor laptop with the running BizTalk server and all this in a VPC image. That's actually not too bad. But so that's what's going on here.
Right, now, so you mentioned before that you could actually receive messages, right?
Yeah.
So what if you use something like, we just saw a really cool demo a little while ago using Excel.
Mm-hmm.
Can you show the audience what that would look like?
You bet. So let me
see. We can see that.
Can you see that?
Yes.
Okay. This is the orchestration.
Right.
It's supposed to be like some sort of human resource application. In fact, some people may find this one familiar. I didn't mention this in the talk. Was that if you read Scott Woodgate's book, Visual Studio 2000, or not Visual, BizTalk Server 2004, Unleashed. Unleashed.
Yeah,
this is the example that he provides.
It's a big, thick book. But
it's a big, thick book, but it's the point of entry for anyone who wants to work on this stuff. So it's really, you know, you've got a receive port. And a document, an XML document comes in, so some employee record, name, birth date, ID number.
And you just fire a condition based on that and fire one branch or the other.
Exactly.
Right?
And if it's one way, it just goes through and comes out here. If it's above a certain level, it comes down this branch, gets transformed into a, you know, through some XML transformation into a different form.
And the orchestration is just all separate from the adapter underneath.
Exactly, because these ports can be connected to anything. They can be connected to file folders. They can be connected to HTTP, EDI, exactly.
Okay.
We've connected them to JMS queues and topics.
Talk to us a little bit about using JMS and service host together. How would you do a receive on this?
Okay, well, you know, our adapters do allow you to create hosted services, inbound services, and essentially what you have there is you register a listener, an event handler, that will get fired every time a message comes in.
So essentially this is just like another, to the .NET developer, it's going to look just like any other binding, really. It's
exactly
going to look like a basic HTTP binding or whatever.
That's right.
Cool.
And we'll do this in Excel. I mean, this is like something from real life where, you know, banks and, you know, trade, you know, financial traders, you know, use Excel as a real GUI, a real live GUI, rather than just as an analysis tool.
Okay.
So what I've done here is I've created a hosted service, actually two services, but, you know, that's because the demo can get a little more complicated. But there's a hosted service here, and what this service does is it has a
host.open. Look at that.
You know, exactly. We create the host and we open it. And the actual service itself is what the listener does is when a message comes in on a topic is essentially the publish subscribe version, you know, of JMS. The message will come in on the particular durable subscription right here, the text. And what we're going to do there is just execute this add-in I created using Visual Studio Tools for Office. And it will be essentially it's a JMS, not JMS, an XML message that gets parsed. The various pieces will get put in the appropriate columns, and put in a new row in the spreadsheet.
Okay.
So what I'm going to do here is it's already been set up, and I'm going to bring up a little JMS client we've created. And this client is kind of cool because all it does is it's a .NET application, but it's actually running our JMS adapter in the background.
So this isn't in process with Visto or anything, right? This is just a standalone .NET app.
This is correct. This is just a standalone .NET app. But what's going on is actually kind of interesting. There was a lot of stuff going on under the hood because what's happening is I'm creating a record.
Right.
And now it's an XML record. It's going to go out on a queue. It's going to be read in to a BizTalk server orchestration using our BizTalk adapter, which has been bound to an input port in the queue, in the orchestration. It'll rattle around in that orchestration, get processed, come out of a send port, go out through another instance of our adapter out onto another queue, where it will both be read by our client here.
So it's manifest is whenever you create this record, it either goes to the employee or executive record, right?
Exactly. In this case, it's just going to be an employee record.
And that's based on the grade,
on the grade level.
Not the date of birth, because we can't decide executives based on date of birth.
No,
right?
that would be illegal, not to mention irresponsible. So let's send that message.
Okay.
And now, you know, probably since the first time we've done it, since we rebooted, it's going to take a couple of seconds for various things to get loaded. And,
so we got a lot going on. This is jitting not only the client-side app, but also BizTalk on the back end.
That's correct.
And then we also have some coolness that's going on. So it's going to JMS, and JMS has got to go back, cons up some stuff, mm-hmm. return back through correct. The ports. But really cool thing is that it's also using Visto on the back. So what are we going to see?
What we're going to see is, if all goes well, that we're going to see the record come out in the employee record, and also on a new row on the. It goes. Oh, look at that. Uh-oh. And you missed it. But there it is. Let me give you another one. Let me lay another one on you. This one, I mentioned there are actually two inbound services. There are actually two worksheets here, one for executives and one for employees. And you notice that was just an employee, so it didn't appear there. Now I'm going to up the employee level. I don't have enough screen real estate here. Sorry about that. So now I'm going to put my own name in. I'm going to up the employee grade, create a new record, and send it. And now you'll see versions of it appear in both these windows. You'll see an instance of it here. And you also see when we go and look at the other sheet.
So still got a bit of work because you're on 1 meg, VPC, BizTalk, and other processes running. But that was actually pretty quick.
Yeah.
Okay. And then you said it shows on the executive tab, right?
It should. Let's find out.
Look at that. There she is. Okay. He is.
And should be, we're lucky.
There you are.
There it is.
Very cool. Very cool little demo.
Yeah.
All right. So show us a little bit about BizTalk behind the scenes.
Okay.
I mean, hopefully everybody's at least seen the concept of BizTalk adapters before. What does that look like whenever you configure the JM Bridge Pro?
Okay. Adapter? Well, it's really pretty simple. What we have here, let's look at. We see that we've installed this adapter in BizTalk server.
Okay.
And here it is. And
So it shows up along all the out-of-the-box ones, too, right?
Exactly.
There's MQ.
And, there's MQ. And bring up the properties. And you'll see you really don't need to know anything about programming programming JMS.
It's kind of similar to the properties window we would have seen while configuring the line of business SDK as well, right?
Exactly. So, I mean, you need things like, that's right, it's exactly what you see in the line of business SDK. It's just various coordinates, like things like the initial contact names of various factory classes need to be supplied. You can get these from your JMS administrator. This is the key to the whole thing, is that this will work with any vendor's JMS implementation. And the reason is that we actually embed in the system the...
Look at that.
The clients of the... the classes of the particular JMS client.
Sure.
We essentially create assign a class path. And in this case, here are the jar files for OpenJMS, which is the JMS implementation we're using here. If we were using WebLogic or WebSphere or Sonic, we would have a different set.
Okay, so that's an interesting point that I think our watchers would be interested in hearing. What is JMS? I mean, you just said that you have something different for each vendor. Why does it not work once for all vendors?
Okay, well, what happens is that JMS is a specification, not an application. So what it really is a set of a set of interfaces.
Okay.
A set of contracts that behaviors that should happen when you call methods in those interfaces. But the implementing classes that implement those interfaces are not specified. They're different from vendor to vendor. And everything that happens under the hood is not specified.
So this is kind of like the W3C DOM, where we had IXML node, but whoever implemented underneath, it's up to you.
Yeah, exactly. But it's all up in the air. And what's happening underneath, as far as wire protocols,
right.
JMS, totally incompatible from one to the other.
Oh, cool.
It's not part. So that's why.
Well, wait. If it's incompatible, then am I going to be able to use this and drop on a BEA? BAA's queue and then IBM pick it up?
Yeah, well, what happens is you're going to need the client classes for both BEA and IBM and use the appropriate ones for talking to the appropriate servers.
Are they compatible at the protocol level?
No, they're not.
Okay. So then you need something in the middle to do some translation between them?
Well, no. What happens is that you're going to need something in the middle to do some translation between them, exactly. So what you're going to have is that, you know, the actual wire protocols for the particular implementations are totally proprietary. There's been some push toward making something standard, but it's not there.
Okay.
So what you need is you're just going to make sure that your client and your server are both from compatible vendors. The vendors are the same. Now, if you had this server here and this server here and they're different vendors, yes, you're going to need some sort of middleware, which essentially acts as a client for both of them.
Wayne, can you put up your contact information real quick for everybody to see?
Of course.
Okay. So let's see. Here we go. And so Wayne Citrin from Dam Bridge LLC in Boulder, Colorado. Thank you very much for coming out and talking with us.
Thanks.